It's time to reclaim control, not just of your law firm, but of your life. Welcome to the Law Entrepreneur Podcast. Discover how early adopters are leveraging cutting-edge legal tech and early adoption strategies to lead the industry while embracing work-life balance. Unlock the secrets to a thriving law practice and a balanced, happy life with the Law Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 405 of the Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host, joined by my good friend and co-host, Sam Malai. Sam, how are you doing out there on the West Coast today?
Amazing. Feeling great. We're recording this on June 4th for those listeners that are listening in. And I think it'll be super relevant when you're hearing this. So super excited.
Well, I'm thrilled to be back in the saddle again. We relaunched the podcast a couple weeks ago. And looking at all the numbers, it seemed to have picked up right where we left off and started to grow from there. So it's very, very exciting for that to be taking place. And we got a couple things we want to chat about today that I really think is going to set the tone and the path for moving forward here, because we're going to talk about AI tools. And I think I've been upfront and indicated that I've paid attention to the progress in the world of artificial intelligence and kind of tried to focus on what others have been saying about its impact to the legal space. But to be honest with you, Sam, I haven't put my finger on the pulse as clearly or as well as you have. So I'm really interested to hear what your thoughts are, and if I can shed any light on that, I'd be happy to do so.
Absolutely. And, you know, when all these AI tools came out starting about 2 years ago, I started bookmarking, signing up for them, signing up for the wait lists, and just trying out as many as possible. I think I probably tested out over 200, but I'm pretty good at cutting through the noise. I've seen so many tools that I know what's really actually practical and usable versus right. The gimmicky ones. And there's a lot of gimmicky ones. I would say probably over 80% are not necessary at all. And I feel like actually a lot of people get distracted by something that they see, and all of a sudden they go down the rabbit hole, and then all of a sudden they end up making a video with an AI tool that took them 2 hours, which they're not going to ever use. But what we're going to do is we're going to cut through a lot of that noise, and I'll be sharing the five best AI tools for lawyers to 5x for your productivity.
Yeah, and who wouldn't want that? I mean, that's certainly a realistic and admirable goals. So, you know, I think the one that seems to be getting the most attention, I think, is number one on our list here. Talk a little bit about ChatGPT Mobile and particularly this new iteration that just came out a couple of weeks ago.
So this one, number one, I think we start off with a bang, because it might be the most valuable and most practical one that most people don't use. I kind of had foresight that I realized that ChatGPT Mobile app is actually a better version of the Google mobile app, where instead of every time you run into any questions or conundrums, instead of going to Google search, what if instead you go to ChatGPT to ask your questions? So when I kind of realized this about a year ago, I'd replaced my Google mobile app with my ChatGPT. So it's in the same place. For those that are seeing this on video, you have to see it. It's on the bottom right kind of location of my phone.
It's kind of weird because it's the exact same spot on my phone. So
I mentioned this in the last episode, but it's definitely worthwhile. So call to action, definitely go and, you know, at the very least, install the ChatGPT mobile app from the App Store and place it on your home screen. And if anything, I would say replace your Google to kind of build that kind of the habit of, you know, every time you run into any questions that you have, so you pull that out. But what it can do, obviously, first is search for whatever questions that you have. So questions come up, I don't know how to do this, throw that in. That's obviously the first thing. Second thing that I think a lot of people don't use it for is taking pictures or uploading a picture of something that you need further explanation or you don't understand. Let's just say you have a page of notes and you're like, you don't have time to go read it. You could literally take your phone out, take a picture with the mobile app and say, summarize this and give me the top three takeaways. That is super practical for us lawyers. You know, time is limited. Take a picture of it and, you know, get those key takeaways. Also, it's multimodal, which means that there's also a voice and audio capability. So just a couple of weeks ago, OpenAI did release their kind of live conversational AI. On the bottom right, you'll see a little headphone icon. And you click on that, and we actually did this in our last episode, you're able to talk to AI. I know it's kind of weird and kind of funky, like this kind of awkward conversation, but it will be something that I think over time, the humans will become more and more comfortable with just talking to their AI, or at least it will be on your computer. And it's as things come up, just the same way that you say, hey, blank, I don't want to say that word because it might initiate that for our listeners. But you'll be able to also do that with AI. Anytime, you know, you're working. Hey, by the way, can you answer this question for me? Can you do this for me? So yeah, the ChatGPT mobile app, taking advantage of the search, taking advantage of the photo upload, and also of the conversational audio voice function is where it's at.
Now, Sam, have you found that you've had to give more thought to the questions you pose or the format that you pose them in? I mean, is it, you know, when you type something into Google search, oftentimes it doesn't really matter how you type it in, you know, what order the terms are, just kind of random thought. I want to explore this subject, and you get what Google can tell you back. But my experience with the ChatGPT is it's way more conversational, and that the results are really dependent. They look to be more resolved the better you pose the question. Exactly. Your experience?
Yeah, that's pretty spot on. Basically, the answer you get from ChatGPT is only as good as your prompt. So the better the prompt, better the question, as you're saying, the better the response. And what I'm about to share with our listeners is if you know these three rules with ChatGPT, you'll be better than 80-90% of ChatGPT users. Rule number one is to provide context, as much context as possible. I mean, context just means information that you already have or know, just throw it in. It doesn't matter what format, it doesn't matter how it's, you know, if there's spelling mistakes, grammar mistakes, or how it's formatted, it doesn't matter. Just literally go and copy and paste something that you already have on your computer, or something that you know, or something even possibly that you could pull out either sometimes from ChatGPT itself or from Google that you could add into the question.
Yeah.
Second is being specific with what you want, right? Being descriptive, detailed as possible, kind of giving a more thorough explanation of what you need. You know, if you ask a generic thing, you'll get a generic answer. If you ask a very specific thing about exactly what you want, then the AI will be able to exactly figure out what you want and give you that thorough explanation. And third is stream of consciousness. Don't be stingy with your words. Type your heart out. Don't hold anything back. Express your thoughts freely as possible. And the more you share, the better AI will kind of assist you. So overall, the overarching theme is just give it more context, basically.
Yeah, the sense that I got was that similar to what we would call long tail search terms in a Google search, the longer the tail can be in ChatGPT, I think the better my observation was the results were.
Exactly. Yeah, that is like basically one form of kind of thinking about it is kind of more context, aka like long-term keywords.
I'll give you an example of what I used it for since we last spoke. There's a little nuance in estate planning law where it intersects with family law having to do with the right of a spouse to take the elective share in an estate. Okay, so if you try and write your spouse out of the will, your spouse can stand up and say, hey, wait a second. I have the statutory right to take my elective share. I've always had some difficulty explaining that to my clients. And I just, as a function of trying to work with ChatGPT, I had this conversation with the app and spelled out what I wanted to do. I wanted to create, you know, a 1-minute description of what the elective share option is in the power of attorney document under Maryland law as it relates to the intersection. You know, I just went through that whole spiel. And what I got was a really very nice description of it in text form. And then I further refined that to try and say, remove the legal jargon and explain it in terms that, you know, an average high schooler would understand. And it kind of revised the entire process until I got something that was really very useful. And I turned it into a script for a video and sent it out to everybody I knew.
That's
a real world application of how to use chat GPT.
I love it. I love it, Neil. All right, let's move to number two, which is Adobe Enhance Speech. For any of my of our lawyer friends who struggle with, you know, you're creating videos and you're like, well, the audio doesn't sound good, so maybe I'm not going to put it up. Well, you never have to worry about that ever again. Doesn't matter the quality of your videos or your audio. If you're providing, you know, creating videos for YouTube, creating videos for social media, you're creating amazing videos like Neil shared for your clients. If you want to sound nice and like professional, then Adobe Enhance Speech is the right tool for it. It's $10 a month. It even has a free feature, which I believe gives you enough usage that you'll to kind of test it out. All you do is you just drag the video file over, and within a couple of minutes, you get back a download of this crisp, professional sounding audio.
Yeah. So this is what I would refer to as, you know, post-editing enhancement, because for a lot of us, particularly podcasters, we want that audio to sound fabulous. People will forgive a lot of things. They'll forgive, you know, clutter in your background of your video, or they'll forgive maybe not so perfect eye contact or whatever. But what they won't forgive is poor audio. And you can overcome that with technology, having a good microphone and controlling your environment and so on and so forth. But there was always that requirement for post-production. And, you know, most of us used a professional team to eliminate the background noise and get rid of the ums and the ahs. This is like having that team in your back pocket and could do so at, you know, a very cost-effective way. So if you are producing content that has audio to it, really, you should be taking advantage of this tool.
Yeah. Let me also add a little of a disclaimer in there too. I also kind of realized that not all videos and audio needs to be enhanced either. There are certain situations where you want it to sound natural,
right?
Like the natural sound people, right, resonate with people. And if it's a little bit too artificially enhanced, right, like too much artificial makeup or the Zoom blur feature that, you know, everybody has access to, if you use it too much, then people are going to be kind of skeptical of pretty much you.
That's a very good point. I mean, it's dependent on what the purpose of the video is. If you're creating video that you're going to put into a polished advertisement, for instance, you know, then you would want the quality of the audio to match the quality of the product. If you're making a video that you're going to send out on the quick to your client database, maybe it's more important there to have a more natural interaction with the recipient. So it's a point well made.
Amazing. So let's go to number three, best AI tool for lawyers. To give a little background, Neil, what's the fuel for AI?
Well, the fuel, I think, is knowledge.
Knowledge, and that could be, that's turned into data.
Well,
data.
Sure.
Yep. So data is the fuel for AI. So if that's the case, obviously, we're all sitting on treasure troves of data. But what is the best form of data that we have? That's the data that we have of our own data. All the information, the notes, swipe files, pictures, whatever you could think about that you saved through the years. That is really valuable. And kind of having some foresight a couple of years ago, I realized, wait a minute, I need to start putting my data together. Up until 2 years ago, I saved all my own personal data into my Dropbox, my work files in my Google Drive, my personal stuff in Dropbox as a way to kind of keep it secure. And I started bringing all of that data into Evernote. And the reason why I chose Evernote is because it's one of the most popular, the most popular, most used note-taking app in the world. And they were actually bought out by a pretty big company a couple of years ago. And I knew when they were bought out, they probably had a lot of ambitions to turn it into an AI product, or else they wouldn't buy it out probably. So kind of, again, foreseeing where this is going, hey, let's get my own data into Evernote. And started taking months. It took months to transfer over, but now kind of very structured, organized, broken into categories of pretty much all my life notes when it comes to, I'm like looking at it right now, you know, in my insurance, my things about treasury bills, my investment accounts, things to, you know, have in mind when it comes to investments and all the different things, everything you could possibly think about. And now good news is, a couple of months ago, AI started releasing their AI features. And I'm actually about to kind of bring up what those features are. Number one is it's AI kind of searched. So, you know, as long as you have your data in your Evernote database, there will never be an issue. It doesn't matter how you named it or where you put it in your files, you will to kind of quickly, just the same way that Google has a quick search, you'll to find anything. Same thing with your own data. So AI kind of enabled search when it comes to your own data. Number two, tidying up your notes. So yes, we have some notes that are, you know, that are super organized with headlines and things like that, but there are also notes where we're just throwing things in there. Well, you don't have to worry about it because in just one, just by selecting the text and just basically tidying up the notes, there's a feature that I'm actually looking at right now called AI Edit. You're able to kind of clean up the notes, give it a headline, subheadlines, give it the top takeaways, all that stuff in kind of in within a minute, which is pretty cool. Also, there are some features with obviously summarizing, fixing typos, helping you write introductions, conclusions, and titles, translating, changing tones, but it basically just turns your own database of information into this AI-enabled quick, creator, editor that you ever possibly imagine.
Yeah, you know, I was an Evernote user for many, many years. I eventually transitioned to Apple Notes, which has made dramatic improvements, but doesn't have any of these features, for instance. And, you know, I'm reminded of something that a good friend of mine one time said, that he needed to offload his brain, and that's why he used Evernote. So he didn't want to retain information in his brain. That wasn't really an efficient way to do things. And so he started just dumping everything he could into Evernote. And I did kind of the same thing eventually with Apple Notes. But part of the problem is that you get this hodgepodge, as you were saying, of data. It's in a nice, cabinet, so to speak, a nice filing cabinet, but it's a mess. And I recently went through my notes and I realized, like you said, some are really tailored and beautiful and works of art, and others are just pure, junk in terms of their physical appearance. This would be an enormous game saver to take that, run it through the AI features, get it to, like, a lot of times I would clip something from a legal journal, right? And say, I want to save it here in a note and I'll digest it and read it later. And of course, I never get around to it. Now you multiply that by hundreds and hundreds of times. Now you just have this database of random information that you don't really know what to do with. Running it through AI Edit to get it to summarize, to format it, to write an intro and a conclusion, to just highlight the specific points and pull out the key features. That's unbelievably helpful. Then it goes on. I know you've told me that it will help organize those notes and help you with being able to format them and create templates from common types of features. And now you're really getting to the point where I'm offloading my brain and it's not just all thrown into a file cabinet. It's actually organized by a tool that does it really, frankly, better and faster than I could ever do.
And the whole point of your notes is for it to be used in the future.
Right.
I know some people are just hoarders of just collecting notes, but if it's not usable, then what's the point really? But what you explained, Neil, of kind of your transition from Evernote to Apple Note, and I know a lot of people struggle with this, is which tool is right for me? Luckily, there's an entire book dedicated to this. It's a 272-page book called Building a Second Brain by Tiago Forte. About a year ago, I read this book, and what I'm going to do in the next couple of minutes, I'm going to summarize the entire book for our listeners, and you'll get the valuable insights from it. The biggest takeaway that I got from the book is he explains, again, an amazing title for the book, Building a Second Brain. That's really what it ultimately is that everybody's brain is different. Everybody's built differently. Everybody thinks differently, right? Some of us are kind of creative, some of us are structured, some of us are analytical, et cetera. Everybody's different. That's why I always, when we make our recommendations, when somebody says, what about this? I'm like, hey, that's, if it works for you, by all means do. And that's, part of, having understanding that everybody's different. So he explains that there's four kind of archetypes of brains that that we have. The first one is called the librarian. The librarians enjoy collecting notes and building a catalog of useful resources. Okay, that sounds familiar to you. You probably are a librarian. And as I'm about to explain these next four, try to figure out which one you are, because it will make a difference of which note-taking app is right for you. So first one, we love collecting notes, building a database, swipe files, things like that, kind of straightforward structures. So to allow easy access to retrieval of these notes to support your projects and goals. Number two is the architect. They enjoy planning, designing, and creating their own processes. So it's a little bit more of a three-dimensional versus kind of two-dimensional librarian. They benefit from a notes app that allows them to build their own structured to structure, customize it, and bring their ideas to life. So it's a little bit more of a connection between the notes. The third one is their gardeners. Gardeners enjoy exploring their thoughts and connecting ideas. So probably a little bit more 4D, right? They benefit from a notes app with a bottom-up approach where ideas and connections can emerge organically, kind of linking notes together, kind of a more of a visual 4D mind map kind of people. And then there's the most common one, which is the student. The student doesn't have any strong preference for any of these archetypes. Their notes serve a clear purpose that's often based on short-term priority, such as like writing a paper or, you know, or completing some kind of task with the goal to get it done as simply as possible. Okay, so ask yourself, which one am I? The librarian, the architect, the gardener, or student? And now here's the right tools for one of those four archetypes. If you're a librarian, Evernote. If you're an architect, Notion. If you're a gardener, Obsidian. And if you're a student, Apple Notes or Google Keep.
Wow.
Yeah. Does that kind of make sense, Neil?
It surely does. It maps, you know, pretty well. I had a guest on the podcast years ago, many times, Brett Burney. Brett had the most beautiful note taking. I mean, his notes were works of art, and he did them on the fly. And he really got the most out of his note-taking ability, and he moved back and forth between Microsoft Note and Apple Notes and Evernote. I don't know where he landed these days. I haven't spoken to him in a while, but that would be interesting. So I like that delineation of what kind of note-taker are you. I'm somewhere between librarian and guard, you know? But I think what intrigues me about the Evernote AI features is to take a look at all that data and to make it more usable and structured and cleaner, it might lend itself to be moving into a different kind of note-taking, you know, dominion. So I'm kind of interested in that.
Totally. Maybe whatever it is, definitely the answer is one of those for all of us. And there are huge benefits. For me, like, there isn't a day that I'm not using my Evernote to be able to do what I do. And, you know, use it as a valuable resource for everything, essentially.
Well, and I think the key thing is when you start to use it as your second brain is to be able to access it quickly within the flow and the context of what you're doing. And this type of enhancement, I think, will do nothing but make that more realistic.
Definitely. Let's go to number four, Neil. Ready?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite ones.
So a lot of people worry about spelling mistakes, grammar mistakes, and rightfully so. We're lawyers. We're supposed to write well and be able to communicate what we want across. Grammarly is the right tool for everyone. Everybody needs Grammarly. Yeah, why? Because it's free, first of all. Second, it's a perfect app for your team members, for your virtual assistants. You never really have to worry for your team members to make spelling mistakes or grammar mistakes for them to look silly. Actually, it's one of our required tools whenever somebody joins our team. Part of our SOP is you need to download the Grammarly Chrome extension, because when you're writing on our behalf, you need to sound well. Neil, you want to share your experience with Grammarly?
Yeah, so I use Grammarly all the time, and it in large part because I'm so damn guilty of writing in passive voice. I always wanted something to look over my shoulder and help me stop writing in passive voice. The thing I like the best about Grammarly is it applies across your environment. And so it works within the context of your word processor. It works within the context of your email application. It works within the contents of PDF generating tools, and even things like boxes where you are entering data to fill out a form or to communicate with another process. It works in inside of that as well. So you always have the application of the tool available to you. I find it enormously helpful. And I will also say, if you're using remote virtual assistants, particularly ones that may not be domestically located, i.e. why not all of them? but in particular, if, for instance, English is not their first language, it is extraordinarily valuable to presenting the best image to your clients.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's also free. I'm on the free feature. I've been using it for years. I'm no issues. There's also $12 premium features. If you just go Google Grammarly plans, you'll to kind of see those different settings. But at the very least, go sign up for it. Go download it for your Chrome extension. Start using it.
I've had people say to me, well, both like my word processor, it has a grammar checker in it, but that's only in your word processor, and it's not nearly as good as Grammarly. So Grammarly, as I said, applies across all your platforms. It works with your internet web browser. It works with your word processor. Like I said, all of it.
Amazing. Let's go to number. Now,
this one I don't. Yeah. This one I've never heard of. So I'm you're schooling me on this one.
This one is number 5. Is Mac Whisper Transcription. Mac Whisper, one word, and transcription. It's a transcription tool that allows you to transcript anything and everything, including YouTube videos, audio videos, sometimes even something that you can't record. Let's just say if you see an ad that you really like, you want to know what's their structure. That's what I use. It's able to kind of record the audio that's coming from your browser, transcribes podcasts if need be, and anything and everything. Again, because AI runs on data. Sometimes if I have a data in a format of a video or audio or something, and I want to analyze it, well, I'm going to first turn that into words first using this Mac Whisper transcription tool. Then when I turn into words, then I go throw that into ChatGPT and I ask for what are the top five takeaways, top 10 takeaways, and try to get those insights. A lot of people, again, sometimes they get exposed to like videos and things like, oh, that was amazing. Like, but what were the takeaways? Well, this is the right way to do it.
Will it generate a timestamp.srt file?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, so for our listeners who may not be clear, for if you upload a video to YouTube, you have the ability to add captions to it that are tagged and timestamped to go along with the audio that's associated with that YouTube video. And so it's really, when I first started doing YouTube videos, I didn't have the captions. I wasn't doing captions. And I had a hearing impaired client who said to me, what are you doing, Neil? The technology is there. Put the captions in. And so I use a different platform, rev.com. But this is really very, very similar. And so you absolutely really should be including those captions for a number of different reasons. One, for visually impaired, hearing impaired viewers, but also you take that text and it's associated with the video. If you then use that in any type of other product, it enhances the ability for Google to find you and for the other search engines to see what you're writing about. And it's just it has benefits all across the board.
Totally. I remember my first time using actually this tool was I thought about creating an AI agent who can answer our members' questions. So instead of relying on me to come in and answer, hey, Sam, how do you set up this tool for my lead generation? No, I don't have time to go be able to answer every single person. I would love to, but I can't. So what if I built a database of everything that I've shared inside of our program, all the Friday mastermind calls that I've done over the years? Luckily, I was able to save every single one of those. And I basically used Mac Whisper transcription to turn those into transcriptions. And I basically fed AI all of those transcriptions. And it was really cool, Neil. It still works. And we kind of we're thinking about releasing it to our members. But we had some concerns about that. So instead, we use it internally for our customer support kind of side. Things that if they can't answer, they tap into this to find the right resources and right instructions to provide those answers.
That's really useful.
Yeah. So if people have the kind of like the recordings of calls, maybe it help if it doesn't have like the client's information, that could, you know, if you kind of redirect your client's information, at least their name, their personal information, that could be fed into AI to kind of create the intake scripts to help your team be able to sign up clients. You know, that's another way.
Wow. So those are five really, really good tools. You can see, I think, the immediate application in the legal space, but there's a whole lot more than five, aren't there, Sam?
Oh yeah. There's at least over 100, for lawyers.
So
for lawyers.
I know our listeners, who want to get more depth here or want to kind of explore this further, what should they do to reach out?
So, if you're a lawyer, go to joinlawyerclub.com. It's our free resources where we share all of these tools and resources and everything we could possibly imagine into one platform for free. And once you go there and you join our community, if you go in their classroom, you'll find a class called Best AI Tools for Lawyers, and you'll find the most comprehensive list of all AI tools for lawyers ever put together, including the best chatbots, the best billing and time tracking, AI tools for content and blogging, contract drafting and reviewing, data extraction, demand letter generation, diagramming, discovery, document analysis and research, image optimization, intake, an assortment of language models, AI tools for legal research, matter management, medical summaries, even music production, predictive analysis, transcriptions, video production, workflow and case management, and so much more, all broken down into nice organized categories, all with a couple of options for you with summaries of what they do. Links to those platforms, all broken down for free for our Lawyer Club members who join our community and take advantage of it.
And that link will be in the notes, and our listeners can take advantage of that. And we really hope that you do take advantage of that and let the folks know once you get in the Lawyers Club that you're there as a result of listening to Sam and Neil on the podcast.
Very nice. Let's give a little preview of the next episode, Neil.
Sure.
It is the top 10 biggest mistakes law firm owners should avoid to have their best year yet. Both me and Neil will be sharing our insights of the mistakes we've made along the way and mistakes of
being. Yeah, because when it comes to making mistakes, I'm an absolute pro at it. So
that should be a great episode. So make sure to tune in for next in 2 weeks. For that as well.
Looking forward to it, Sam. Thanks ever so much. It was a joy being with you today.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.